is the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. He is the 10th divinely appointed Imam alayhi salam, and he, of course, is the 10th divinely appointed successor to the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. So here that we are talking about this dialogue which Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam had with one of his companions. And so here he was talking about intention, he was talking about niyya. We had talked a little bit about it in a previous program, but this concept and this idea of niyya and intention is incredibly important, because we find in many of the traditions, and including this part of the conversation of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, that niyya and intention is this very basis and foundation for the acceptance of our deeds, right? And so if our deeds are not based upon a sincere intention, then our deeds and, of course, our intention both are not accepted. And so Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, he talked to the companion, he said that whoever does a thing without intending it by his heart sincerely, it shall not be accepted from him. And that Allah does not accept from a human being any deed except that deed which has sincere intentions. And then he says that this is what Allah has said about the hypocrites in the Holy Quran, when Allah says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, they say with their mouths, they speak what is not in their hearts, meaning it's not sincere, and Allah is best aware of what they conceal. So this is a very real life example of a situation where our intention and our niyyah is really what it matters fundamentally, and then the action, you know, is a consequence or a manifestation of that niyya. So if we're doing something to show off, it's not going to be accepted. If we're doing something to be a fake or a fraud, it's not going to be accepted. And God forbid, if we are saying something we don't even believe in our heart, then well, that definitely is not going to be accepted. So we have to be very careful when it comes to our intention and make sure that it is sincere, it is for the right reasons, it is for the sake of Allah, it is for the satisfaction of Allah, it is in order to be of obedience to Allah, right? We want to attract the satisfaction and contentment of Allah with our good deeds, and of course even refraining from bad deeds. We refrain from bad deeds for the sake of Allah. It is these deeds based upon this sincere intention and niyyah which is accepted by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani has released a new statement following Sunday's drone attack on Russian-held Zaporizhzhia power plant in eastern Ukraine. Tajani said the risk of creating a new Chernobyl must be averted and that a free zone around the nuclear plant must be immediately declared. He also advised against fighting in the vicinity of the nuclear plant. A few days ago, during a celebration for the 75th NATO anniversary, Tajani hinted at the possibility of resuming ties with Russia in the future.
We are not at war with Russia. We criticize Moscow's policies, but we are not at war with the Russian people, and we definitely intend to resume relations with the Russian people.
It is the first time Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, the largest in Europe, has been targeted in military action since November 2022. On Tuesday, Russia blamed Ukraine for launching drone attacks on the plant for a third day, but Ukraine denied any involvement.
The Italian Foreign Ministry's position on the nuclear plant attack is very interesting. Rome, for the first time since the start of the conflict in Ukraine, is not just taking the side of Kiev, but it is pragmatically looking at the interests of the whole of Europe, without focusing on who is to blame for the attack.
Also on Tuesday, the European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell reiterated a warning that the UN's atomic watchdog IAEA issued earlier this week. Borrell said the reckless drone attack in Zaporizhzhia increases the risk of a dangerous nuclear accident.
Italy has often reaffirmed its unwavering support for Ukraine, despite Russia's warning against such moves. The Italian government has so far approved 6 military support packages to Kyiv, inclusive of both lethal and non-lethal equipment and specialized military training activities. Max Civili, Rome.
As India prepares to hold the world's largest electoral exercise from April 19, the main opposition National Congress Party has said the country will lose its secular democratic credentials if the ruling BJP attains power another term, accusing Prime Minister Modi's party of dictatorship. In its election manifesto, the party has promised to boost social spending, saying Modi's ruling party has favored the interests of only the rich. The opposition party promised to uplift the marginalized if it comes to power. Pre-election polls, however, predict Modi sweeping back for a third term. Election results will be declared on June 4th.
Most Indians have realized that only Congress Party can do good for poor and minorities, which is what democracy means. The country is divided today due to politics of division just for votes.
India's main opposition party, which ruled the country for decades, has been struggling to compete with Modi's ruling BJP, which mainly counts on country's largest Hindu majority population for its vote share. The Congress Party, while releasing its election manifesto, has promised more help for the marginalized, including assured jobs for young, improving farmers' income, and better health insurance payouts. The Congress Party accused Modi's BJP of threatening the constitution.
Our party has been crippled using tax agencies. Is it level playing ground? This is not only Congress Party. They will also do same with media houses. So we need to save democracy and constitution. We have to unite against autocratic policies of the BJP government.
Accusing Modi's BJP of crippling his party by freezing its bank account in tax dispute, the opposition party manifesto has vowed to undo BJP policies if the party comes to power, promising that all anti-people laws passed by the ruling BJP without proper democratic process will thoroughly be reviewed and changed, including a much-debated electoral bond controversy. The party assured to address issues related to minorities, communal conflicts, mob lynching and cargo killings, bulldozer politics and suppression of human rights and shrinking dissent. The Congress Party, the main challenger to the BJP, hopes to mount a challenge to Modi's BJP by joining hands with regional parties. The ruling party has, however, downplayed Congress Party's manifesto as a bundle of lies, saying they ruled for 50 years, which is now a divided house of leaders working for personal interests.
In 2014, Modi's ruling BJP gained popularity among India's Hindu majority, promising revolutionary changes in the country, including a crackdown on corruption and economic prosperity. Critics, however, argue another term for the ruling BJP would undermine India's status as a secular democracy, as the ruling party's broader agenda is to transform India into a Hindu supremacist nation. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Highly politicized French polling agencies have rarely dared to make surveys on Palestine, but after 6 months of attempted genocide, a new poll shows public opinion dramatically shifting against Israel. Since October, support for Israel's plan to eliminate Hamas has dropped from 65 to 56%, while condemnation for Israel's war aim has jumped from 35 to 44%. Following the mainstreaming of Islamophobia, France had become an ardently pro-Zionist country. But the polls show that a nation evenly split on support for Palestine isn't far away.
Here in France, we have many stars and actors who are Arabs and Muslims, but who don't say a word about Palestine and who don't support the Palestinian cause openly. It's a shame because they could have a big impact on the French public. Instead, they shut themselves up.
Israel est illégitime.
Israel is illegitimate and has no right to exist. Palestine is unjustly occupied, and I don't see how anyone can fail to see that. I'm waiting for Iran and Hezbollah to do their work and for Israel to get out.
As Palestinians return to the city of Khan Yunis, Gaza's second largest city, the results of 6 months of war are catastrophic. Israel has killed over 33,000 people and wounded 80,000 others in Gaza, the West Bank, and Lebanon. Famine is affecting half of Gaza's 2.2 million people, while some two-thirds of the nation's buildings have been reduced to rubble.
This war really has to stop. People are forgetting that the Palestinians are humans, just like everyone else. There are just horrible things going on for women and children, and there has to be peace immediately.
After 6 months, the United Nations Human Rights Council finally took a position on the horrific invasion. They called for a halt in all arms sales to Israel and for Israel to be held accountable for possible war crimes and crimes against humanity. Many attribute the Western public's shift against Israel not to the mainstream media or brave politicians, but to the gruesome and heartbreaking images being relayed on social and alternative media. Images of the human costs of the West's support for Tel Aviv have long been censored. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Afghanistan is now battling an invisible foe that threatens its future generations. The World Food Programme has sounded the alarm on the rising tide of malnutrition cases, a crisis worsened by the country's ongoing economic challenges and reduced international aid. Marking the World Health Day, the Taliban's Minister of Public Health expresses concern over the malnutrition crisis, calling for international support.
It is clear that Afghanistan is one of the poor countries in the world. There is no doubt that children and mothers are grappling with malnutrition. We need the support of the world in combating the disaster. I call on the UNICEF, WHO and WFP to continue the resistance to our people with poor health conditions, especially those suffering from malnutrition.
The impact of international sanctions and the U.S. policies cannot be overlooked in understanding the gravity of the situation. That is a warning by pediatricians here in Afghanistan. Years of conflict have severely damaged the country's infrastructure, making it a challenge to provide adequate health care and nutrition to vulnerable groups. Moreover, recent cuts in international assistance as well as the Western-led sanctions are worsening things.
There are also some foreign factors exacerbating the malnutrition crisis in Afghanistan. Afghan assets that belong to Afghans and are meant to support our economy are frozen. We are witnessing a decline in international health assistance, especially to our children. Some international bodies continue to collaborate, but these are not sufficient. Some organizations that used to support families have ended their missions in Afghanistan.
A lot of people like me are coming to this hospital because their children are malnourished. I think everything boils down to a single problem, economic shortcoming. If our family had enough to eat, our children wouldn't become undernourished. People don't have money and they're not receiving aid anymore.
Experts emphasize that the need for immediate aid cannot be overstated. Afghan families are in desperate need of assistance to combat this malnutrition crisis. The international community must come together to provide the necessary resources and support to save lives and alleviate the suffering of the Afghan people. The economic crisis in Afghanistan is taking a toll on the health and well-being of the war-ravaged nation. Advocates warn that without a significant increase in support, the crisis will further deepen. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Thousands came together for the annual International Quds Day March in the Canadian city of Toronto to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people, especially those in the besieged Gaza Strip. Palestinian solidarity organizations and communities rallied across from the U.S. consulate, calling on Ottawa and Washington to act urgently to end the Israeli terror campaign and genocide and try to save as many lives as
possible. And this year it's especially important because people are motivated to come out in large numbers to bring an end to this genocide that's taking place in Gaza and underline their commitment to see a free Palestine from the river to the sea and a free Al-Quds, a free Jerusalem, free from Zionism and occupation.
Millions around the world are marching yesterday, today and tomorrow, all week. Thousands of cities and towns across the globe are making Al-Quds Day an international day, a call for justice and freedom, particularly for the Palestinian people as they are facing genocide and war crimes in Gaza.
The city has continued its heavy policing of pro-Palestinian demonstrations. Just 1 week ago, several participants were injured and six others were arrested in the annual Land Day commemoration by the Toronto police, who were captured on camera using excessive force.
So last week, people must have seen the videos by now, but the police completely attacked a peaceful rally, and there was horses involved, and this is what the police do. They're on the side of the Zionists, they terrorize people. You know, a protest, a simple, peaceful protest, you're not allowed. I mean, this is another example of the Palestine exception. That protest is good, it's a liberal, it's a sign of democracy, except when you're talking about Palestine. You can't do that.
Participants also use Quds Day to condemn a recent deadly attack by the Israeli regime on Iran's consulate building in Syria's capital, Damascus.
Well, Iran has been subjugated to all forms of aggression at the hands of the Zionist regimes and their backers. But the last crime that Israel have done in destroying the Iranian embassy in Damascus, that is a zero tolerance. Iran will respond, and I think that Iran is being called upon by the people to respond against this Israeli aggression.
As the targeted killing of civilians and the starvation campaign continue, a temporary resident visa program announced by the administration in Ottawa 3 months ago has failed to bring to Canada any Palestinian relatives of Canadians from Gaza. Against that backdrop, families and activists are pressuring for a real arms embargo on Israel. Camila Escalante, Toronto.
Thousands of Austrians marched under the slogan "Stop the genocide, stop the occupation" in the capital Vienna. The Palestine Committee and Palestine Solidarity Austria organized the demonstration. The march was held on Saturday, a week after house raids of Palestinian activists in the city of Linz. Police recently also interrogated protesters in other cities. International Quds Day was an aspiration for the organizers of Saturday's protest.
And all these commemoration days is to really say, wake up, we are really in the situation where people are getting killed every day and we have to stop it as soon as possible.
Organizers also criticized a four-day visit of the President of the Austrian Parliament, Wolfgang Sobotka, to Israel this week.
Well, obviously, when looking at the last 6 months, there's been some unconditional support for Israel, obviously, and their action in the Gaza Strip, which is absolutely unacceptable.
Several speakers stressed Austrian solidarity with Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the US-Israeli genocidal war continues unabated. They said the Austrian government does not speak for them.
It's the most obvious wrongdoing that I've ever seen in my life.
The protesters called for support for Lebanon and Yemen against US imperialist aggression. People from around the world joined the Vienna march.
I was born in Chile under a dictatorship and I have a lot of Palestinian friends. I am even wearing a t-shirt from a team called Palestina, who was founded by Palestinian migrants several years ago. I couldn't be in peace with myself if I wasn't here demonstrating and saying and raising my voice, at least.
Representatives of Jewish organizations such as Not In Our Name stressed their continued solidarity with the Palestinian struggles. Organizers said all Austrians must continue to protest against the US-Israeli genocide and their government support for it, despite the repression.
We cannot call ourselves humans, regardless of our nationalities or political views or religions, and be indifferent about what's going on nowadays in Gaza.
Thousands marched in the Austrian capital Vienna in support of the people and the resistance in Gaza as the Israeli genocide war claims more civilian lives. Despite Austria's repression, the state and the police were unable to stop the Palestine solidarity movement. Saturday's demonstration has once again shown that the support for Gaza remains strong in Austria. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
With a military parade, Hezbollah marked International Quds Day in Lebanon, where hundreds of Lebanese and Palestinians raised their fists in a show of support for the resistance group and its leader. Hezbollah Secretary General underscored the significance of the Lebanese front and raised his voice in response to the Israeli threat, saying the resistance in Lebanon is fully prepared for any war.
The resistance in Lebanon does not fear war. It has managed battle in the last 6 months with a clear strategy and a vision which is complementary to the ongoing battle in the region. The resistance has managed the battle in a manner that would lead to victory while protecting Lebanon. However, it is fully prepared morally, mentally, and militarily for any war which the enemy would regret having launched against Lebanon.
Hezbollah's leader downplayed the ability of the Israeli regime to launch a full-scale war on Lebanon with the fact that it is extremely exhausted and has achieved none of its declared objectives, except for the killing of innocent women and children. And despite the sacrifices, he said, the alliance of resistance is on the path to a historic and major victory.
Based on logic and political, military, diplomatic, regional, international and economic information, we are able to see very clearly what the leader of the Iranian revolution had said during the first days of the war, that Israel will be defeated and that Gaza will be victorious, and Netanyahu will have no choice but to stop the war, which will be a historic and major victory for the resistance in the region.
A significant part of the speech touched upon the Iranian role in supporting the resistance factions and the oppressed people of the region. It also confirmed that the Iranian response to the Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus will certainly come, and that everyone needs to be ready for what may lie ahead after this retaliation.
We are very close to a victory since the blood that has been shed in Gaza and Lebanon and from all our brothers will be fruitful. This is why this year is exceptional and it has a very positive impact on our hearts and has given us hope that a big victory is possible.
It's not just the duty of Muslims to take part in Al Quds Day, but also as human beings all over the world, since it proves their humanity.
We are here not to support just Gaza. We are supporting all Palestine, the resistance in all region. We'll elaborate Palestine and Al-Quds, and we will win, inshallah.
Hezbollah's leader also noted that Al-Aqsa flood has put Israel's existence in danger and exposed its vulnerabilities. And those who should be ashamed are the ones who have normalized ties with Israel.
Al-Quds Day this year is distinct on all levels. Loud actions have been made, not only in support of the Palestinian people, but in establishing what could turn into a tangible plan to end the occupation of the Holy Land. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson continue our Ramadan lifestyle post Eid. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we are talking about continuing our Islamic lifestyle, or rather continuing our Ramadan lifestyle into our Islamic lifestyle post-Eid. So of course, you know, the day of Eid is this wonderful day in which we celebrate, you know, that inshallah we have hope that Allah has accepted this worship and fasting and the du'as and supplications and prayers and all the things that we did in the holy month of Ramadan. You know, we have a little bit of sadness because we have lost this divine companion, and many people will feel a little bit of sadness. One of the scholars, they have called it the post-Ramadan blues, and that's because you have this spiritual ecstasy that you are experiencing in this holy month, and when it ends, you kind of feel that dip. And many times, you know, we stop doing all of the things that we were doing in the holy month of Ramadan. So I'm not saying, you know, that we continue fasting throughout the rest of the year every single day, but you know, many of the supplications and the du'as that we were reciting in the holy month of Ramadan, the recitation of the Holy Quran, the focus and attention upon our prayers or praying our salah, our wajib, obligatory daily prayers on time, or praying them, you know, but on time. All of these things should be continued, you know, now that the day of Eid is has passed, and of course the holy month of Ramadan has passed, right? For 30 days, we were able to live a Ramadan lifestyle. And so now, post Ramadan, we need to continue that lifestyle. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about how we need to continue the Ramadan lifestyle into our regular Islamic lifestyle post-Eid. So, you know, please be careful. Hopefully on the day of Eid you didn't break the rules, or you won't break the rules. Be careful about that, you know. Be careful about the mahram and non-mahram relationships and conditions. You know, don't break those as well. It's unfortunate that in the holy month of Ramadan, you know, we are focusing on spirituality and taqwa, you know, this God consciousness, this piety. But unfortunately, when we get to the day of Eid or after Eid, we kind of break all of these rules, and that's really detrimental to all of the spirituality and purity that we were gaining in the holy month of Ramadan. And so post Ramadan, you know, take some notes down, take some time out and write all of the various things that you learned in the holy month of Ramadan, and then inculcate them and keep them. I mean, you've already kept them for 30, 29 or 30 days and nights. You know, now you are kind of adjusted to this Ramadan lifestyle, which in reality we said was an Islamic lifestyle. And so continue that Islamic lifestyle for the rest of your life, inshallah. And if, God forbid, we start to become a little bit weak as we get closer to next year's holy month of Ramadan, well, we look forward to that holy month of Ramadan in order to once again recharge us and keep us on our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The head of the World Health Organization has said the killing of Gaza's children is a stain on all of humanity. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The head of the World Health Organization, WHO, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, has called for an end to the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war in Gaza, saying the high number of children casualties in the besieged territory will remain a stain on all of humanity. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, in a post on X on Sunday, 7th of April, said, "The deaths and grievous injuries of thousands of children in Gaza will remain a stain on all of humanity. This assault on present and future generations must end." He also condemned as inhumane and intolerable the denial of basic needs by the Israeli regime, including the cutting off of food, fuel, sanitation, shelter, security and healthcare, stressing that the fact that over 70% of deaths in Gaza are by women and children and should be a compelling reason for halting the war in Gaza. The World Health Organization chief further noted that the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas's attack against the Israeli regime in early October of last year does not justify the horrific ongoing bombardment and siege by the Israeli regime. He also reiterated his call for peace while vowing to continue to serve healthcare workers, patients and communities in Gaza. The latest development comes just a week after World Health Organization reported that newborn mortality is rising sharply in Gaza as the Israeli regime has destroyed the Palestinian territory's healthcare system. The Israeli regime began its genocidal war in Gaza on 7th of October last year, after the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas carried out Operation Al-Aqsa Storm against the usurping entity in retaliation for its intensified atrocities against the Palestinian people. Meanwhile, the Islamic Republic of Iran says the aggression by the United States and Britain against Yemen is a violation of the country's territorial integrity and in line with support for Israel's crimes and atrocities against oppressed Palestinians in Gaza. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remark in a meeting with Mohammad Abdussalam, the senior representative of Yemen's National Salvation Government, in the Omani capital Muscat on Sunday, 7th of April. Hossein Amir Abdollahian praised the brave support of the Yemeni armed forces for the oppressed Palestinian people in the fight against the Israeli regime over the past 6 months. In recent months, the United States and its allies have launched illegal attacks on Yemen amid their frustration in the face of anti-Israel maritime campaign by the Yemeni armed forces. In support of Gaza, the Yemeni armed forces have targeted Israeli ships going to and from ports in the occupied Palestinian territories, or those linked to Israel in the southern Red Sea, in the Bab el-Mandab Strait, in the Gulf of Aden, and even in the Arabian Sea. The US-led attacks on Yemen has prompted the country's military to declare American and British vessels to be legitimate targets. Also, Israeli occupation forces are deliberately targeting Palestinian women in their genocidal war in Gaza, according to a Palestinian minister. The comment was made in a Sunday, 7th of April, press statement by the Palestinian government's Minister of Women's Affairs, Mona Al-Khalili. Al-Khalili noted that 9,560 Palestinian women have been killed by the Israeli military since the beginning of the genocidal campaign in Gaza on 7th of October last year. Women in the Gaza Strip are suffering from the most dangerous and harsh conditions in decades as a result of deteriorating health and living conditions, displacement, and lack of shelter, in addition to the lack of food and water, the Palestinian minister said. Mona Al-Khalili stated that there are approximately 15,000 pregnant women currently in the Gaza Strip, 95% of whom do not eat sufficient amounts of food, which increases health risks to the mother and the fetus. She added that there are about 1 million forcibly displaced Palestinian women who face exacerbated risks in shelter centers which lack basic facilities. Mona Al-Khalili said approximately 37 Palestinian mothers are killed every day in Gaza, leaving behind devastated families and displaced children. In an interview with Press TV on 26th of March, Reem Al-Salem, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women and Girls, said the violence inflicted on Palestinian women and children by the Israeli regime could qualify as acts of genocide under Article 2 of the Genocide Convention. AFP news agency Agence France-Presse has also covered the same story and tells us more. The United Nations and other international aid organizations on Sunday, 7th of April, decried the devastating toll of 6 months of warfare in Gaza, warning that the Palestinian territory had become beyond catastrophic. 6 months is an awful milestone, the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies said, warning that humanity has been all but abandoned in the severity of the conflict in Gaza. The Israeli regime's genocidal offensive in Gaza has killed at least 33,175 Palestinians, many of them women and children, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry in the territory. The World Health Organization chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus made a new condemnation of the barbaric act of violence, thus unleashed the war. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus stressed that the atrocity does not justify the horrific ongoing bombardment, siege and health system demolition by the Israeli regime in Gaza, killing, injuring and starving hundreds of thousands of civilians, including aid workers. Adhanom Ghebreyesus wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter, the denial of basic needs such as food, fuel, sanitation, shelter, security and healthcare is inhumane and intolerable. Of Gaza's 36 main hospitals, only 10 remain even partially functional, according to the World Health Organization. The WHO chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus voiced particular outrage at the deaths and grievous injuries of thousands of children in Gaza, which he said would remain a stain on all of humanity. "This assault on present and future generations must end," he said. Philip Lazzarini, head of the United Nations Agency supporting Palestinian refugees known as UNRWA, said the hellhole in Gaza is deepening by the day. "All lines, including the red lines, were crossed. This war is made far worse through technologies misused by humans to harm other humans en masse." Writing on X, formerly known as Twitter, Philip Lazzarini said, "It is made worse by the famine born from an Israeli-imposed siege on Gaza. One would think it's from a different era. As a result, a man-made famine is eating up bodies of babies and young children." The head of UNICEF, Catherine Russell, said more than 13,000 children have reportedly died in the Palestinian territories. "Homes, schools and hospitals are in ruin. Teachers, doctors and humanitarians killed. Famine is imminent." Catherine Russell, the head of UNICEF, said on X, formerly known as Twitter, on Saturday, 6th of April. The United Nations humanitarian chief Martin Griffiths insisted on Saturday, 6th of April, that there needed to be a reckoning for this betrayal of humanity. The World Health Organization chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus pointed out that over 70% of those who have died in Gaza have been women and children. He said, "We urge all parties to silence their guns, and we appeal for peace right now."
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir Al-Sadr. He was born in Qadamiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahruddin was.
When we say Divan of Hafiz is a book of Irfan.
Mulawi claims that this Masnavi Ma'navi is the interpretation of the Quran.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an introduction into the religious and scholarly life of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite dignitaries and scholars. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Fadai and Shaykh Rouhani. Shaykh Fadai, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Alright, for today's discussion, we want to talk about another personality, another Shaheed al-Mughawama, this time from Pakistan. He is no one but Sayyid Arif Hussain Husseini. Shaykh Rouhani, let's start with you, brother. Give us some information about the Shaheed al-Mughawama, about his early life and education, especially Sayyid Arif Hussain al-Husseini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Arif Hussain, son of Sayyid Fazl Hussain, was born in 1946 in a village called Pivar, which is part of Parachinar state or region in northern part of Pakistan. The family of this great personality was among the religious figures and Sadat of that area. Actually, when he was a child, of course, he was in that village and learned Quran al-Karim and the primary kind of religious studies, studies from his father, and then went to the madrasa or school.
Yes.
School, actually, in the same place, I mean, Parachinar. So in 1343, he got his certificate from the high school, and then moved for Islamic, let's say, studies or Hawzawi studies. Sayyid Arif al-Husseini went to Najaf and for, let's say, advanced studies, Islamic studies, and attended the classes of the great scholars there, like Ayatollah Madani or Mudarris al-Afghani and Sheikh Ashraf Isfahani, Ayatollah Murtazawi. These are the great scholars who were among the teachers and, let's say, masters of his studies in Hawzawi lessons in Najaf al-Ashraf.
Yes.
And then later he got familiar with the late Imam Khomeini, radwanullahi ta'ala alayhi.
Mm-hmm.
And he attended the congregational prayers of the Imam,
yes.
The prayers led by Imam at that time. And of course, step by step, he got more and more familiar with the late Imam al-Khomeini,
yes.
And got his wakala.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he was actually there together with Imam and supporting Imam al-Khomeini at yes. that time in Najaf.
Okay, thank you very much, Shaykh Rouhani, for a nice introduction. And Shaykh Fadai, as Shaykh Rouhani said, a kind of wakala or ijaza, in fact, was given to Sayyid Arif Husseini by the late Imam Khomeini, somehow acting as a representative in Pakistan. So give us a picture of Pakistan on that time. I mean, I think that familiarity with the ideas and thoughts of the late Imam Khomeini also made a revolution among the Tulab and the Hawzawi students of Pakistan too, isn't it?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, Shaheed Sayyid Arif Husseini was the first Pakistani clergyman and scholar who got wakala, an attorney from Imam Khomeini. You know, in our fiqh, Marja received a lot of money, mm-hmm. not for himself, but to spread these money to the Islamic society, to help the society in different kind of way, and he can make some attorney, he can have some attorney and wakil,
yes.
For himself in order to do his job in other cities and other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the marja of Shia are so sensitive about that.
Mm-hmm.
They do not give this wakala to anyone.
Okay.
The one should be completely familiar in the field of knowledge, in the field of taqwa, and they should be trusted by that marja.
Yes.
Sayyid Arif Husseini was in this level, mm-hmm. of that time, and Imam Khomeini was so sensitive to whom he gives the wakala. And you know, in Pakistan at that time, the government was dictatorship.
Okay.
And they didn't observe the rights of Shia, and even we can say Muslims, because maybe at the beginning Pakistan was formed in order to have the different states for Muslims.
Yes.
But after the power of Britain on mm-hmm. in the Pakistan, okay. we can say that they westernized Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
More than be Islamized.
Yes.
But some figures like Sayyid Arif Husseini, they could change this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
They could revive the Muslims.
Yes.
In that country. He became familiar with Imam in Najaf, and Najaf at that time was the main Hawza. And we can say all the important Islamic figures,
yes.
with the spirit of liberty and fighting with the arrogance and istikbar, they were affected by Imam Khomeini,
mm-hmm.
whether in Najaf,
yes.
or in Qom, whether directly or indirectly. And Sayyid Arif was one of the figures who had a relationship with Imam and was affected by him. And he was arrested in Iraq.
Yes.
Because of his revolutionary kind of thought and fighting with Saddam regime. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting to know that even he became arrested after that in Iran, mm-hmm. in the time of Pahlavi.
But because he was against Pahlavi. Against Pahlavi. Too,
you know,
right.
It means that it is not important in which place you live. Mm-hmm. It is important to live as a real Muslim.
Yes.
And stay in front of arrogance. And Sayyid Arif had this role in Iraq, in Iran, and in Pakistan as a leader.
That's all right. Okay. Up to an extent that after his martyrdom, we know that he got martyred. Unfortunately, he was assassinated. After his martyrdom, the late Imam Khomeini sent a message of condolence to the houses of Islam and said that today I missed my dear son, you know, calling him as his son. Sheikh Rouhani, this political movement in Pakistan, as Sheikh Fadai also said, was against two important enemies. Number one was the liberal capital one, and the other one was the radical Islam, isn't it, on that time?
Actually, you know, the main problem that the people of Pakistan at that time suffered from, and still they're suffering, is the corruption, mm-hmm. Also discrimination, injustice, oppression. Because you see, whenever you have this kind of problem in your society, of course, then the elites of that society try to resist and fight against any kind of discrimination. Sometimes you have tribal discrimination, sometimes you have linguistic kind of discrimination, sometimes you have religious discriminations,
yes.
that are leveled against a certain group of people in the society. So that's why the minorities, particularly tashayyu maybe, or some specific groups or ethnicities, they were suffering from these lots of injustice and discriminations leveled against them by, yes. sometimes by government, sometimes by the other political parties or movements inside Pakistan. So that's why in order to establish justice, in order to fulfill justice in the society, in order to fight any kind of discrimination in the society, so these scholars such as Shahid Arif al-Husseini and the other members of the Nahzat-e Ja'fariya or the Ja'fariya movement in
yes.
Pakistan, they of course started fighting and resisting against this kind of oppression and injustice which were leveled against the people of Pakistan.
That's
so
right.
That's why they were supported by the people, and of course this Nahza or movement supported largely by the people, as you see when he got martyred, Ziaul Haq, the
yes.
Let's say prime minister at that time, or the chancellor of the Pakistan at that time, attended the funeral ceremony of this Sayyid, and also
yes.
A very let's say high kind of delegation mm-hmm. also attended this funeral from Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it shows that how much people supported, how much people loved this movement, particularly this Sayyid, who was, let's say, largely and extendedly, we can say, supported by the people,
yes.
because of this kind of resistance and fighting against any kind of injustice and discrimination.
That's
in
right.
Pakistan.
You named Ja'fari movement of Pakistan. This is one of the most important Shiite political party in Pakistan, which was established and founded by Mufti Ja'far Hussain. You know, and now Sayyid Sajid Ali Naghvi is the current president and the head of this movement over there. That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai, for a nice elaboration
yeah.
regarding, as you said, he was martyred and he was assassinated, and his tomb is placed in Parachinar in Pakistan. Over there, we want to finish today's program with a part of his speech with the English translation. We'll listen to that and then we'll finish our program. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at parstudio.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fiyaman.
خمینی عظیم، ای خمینی کفر شکن، ای خمینی کبنده شرق و غرب، ای خمینی وارثی ائمه اطهار، ای خمینی،
او خمینی the great، او خمینی the idol breaker، O Khomeini, the smasher of the East and the West. O Khomeini, the inheritor of the pure Imams. O Khomeini, the rightful representative of Imam Mahdi. When you raise the chant of Islam in the land of Iran, our young men in the Islamic Pakistan became determined to implement Islam in Pakistan too. O dear Khomeini, on the occasion of Women's Day, when you urge the Muslim women to follow the seerah and character of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, our sisters in Pakistan as well, said labbaik to your call, became determined to follow the seerah of Lady Fatima al-Zahra in Pakistan too. Oh dear Khomeini, when you told the youth in Iran to bring the mosques back to life, and that mosques are the strongholds, our Pakistani youth also said labbaik to your call. They turned their mosques into a stronghold and crowded them to learn Islamic knowledge. O dear Khomeini, when you declared the Day of Quds for the sake of solidarity among us the Muslims against Zionism so that the first Qibla could be freed, the Pakistani youth, elderly, women, scholars, everyone said labbaik to your call, commemorated the Day of Quds, and chanted the slogans against America, Israel, and the Soviet Union. The slogans, this to America, this to Israel, and this to the Soviet Union.
ما عاد يرعبني ظلم يهددني لا شيء أخسره لا لا مهما يطول الدرب فالحق معه الرب لا شك ينصره عزمي غدا كالخيل يمضي ولئن عثرت قدماه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines, the death toll from Israel.